Hard Line. Enter at your own risk.
Welcome back to the Hardline, 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS, 5-9ofthefan.com, 205 St. Louis, Missouri. I am former Missouri wide receiver TJ Moe, along with the voice of your Slew Billikens and the voice of something, John Hadley.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm not a voice for is sitting there and ripping other people when I can't even do something. And once again, Bernie Miklas goes to prove just what a self-serving, overinflated opinion of himself and basically overinflated in general when he takes a shot at a guy like Howard Balzer today because Isaac Bruce didn't get into the Hall of Fame. Miklas, who is, oh, I'm too busy to do Isaac Bruce. No, you're not too busy, Miklas. You're too gutless to do it because Isaac Bruce is actually a test. Miklas, I get my guys in. Oh, yeah, Kurt Warner was a toughie. Yeah, Marshall Faulk's a toughie. Oh, Orlando Pace, that's a toughie. Aeneas Williams, that's a toughie, Bernie. Those are toughies. No, when the tough guy came around, you ran like a little chicken ass and handed it off to somebody else. They don't get in, and then you're going to publicly humiliate them, you chicken ass little can't do your job because you're scared to fail like you normally do anyhow. Take a hike, tough guy. Take a hike, big shot. Take a hike, most overrated voice in this city. You're a joke. You're pathetic. Balzer should come over and whoop your ass, you pathetic puke. Hey, back to hockey talk,
John,
with TJ Moe.
If I may, opinions expressed are not necessarily those of everyone in the room.
Not necessarily, and certainly not, actually.
I'm friends with John and Howard and Bernie. Yes. My name is Paul. That's between y'all.
Yeah. With friends like Bernie, who needs enemies for throwing you under the bus? Yeah. Oh, I get guys in. I got Kurt Warner in, Marshall Faulk, Orlando Pace, all-time greats. Isaac Bruce, who you have to fight for, and you run like a little chicken ass, and then you want to blame somebody else? Jesus, God. Man, why don't you wake up and look in the mirror someday?
With all that being said, I'm going to agree with Rammer here. I'm friends with all these guys, and I hope they all continue to do well. All right. I'm sorry.
Well done.
I'm sorry we just put you through that. Chris Kerber, the voice of your
St.
Louis
Blues. Whoa, kiss my ass, you're sorry for. What do you want
to
kiss Miklas' ass now?
I'm talking to
Kerber. Is that what you want to do, tough guy?
Kerber does not want to listen to
you. You want to pop off your opinion about everybody? Now you're going to apologize for me? Kiss my ass. Who the hell are you?
Chris Kerber, welcome to the show.
Hi, guys.
Curbs, I was looking at something last night, and so the Blues were 10-18 on December 10th, and then Zach Sanford volunteered to get punched in the face by Robert Bertuzzo. Since that time, they are 14-9. If someone would have just told me that we needed a human sacrifice, then we could start winning, I would have volunteered to walk down there in August. I'm not sure what took so long.
You know what, guys? I think that I don't know if that coincided with anything, to be honest with you, other than I think that the frustrations at that point were really starting to boil over. And, you know, they were dealing with the frustrations were boiling over. And it finally came to a head in a battle drill. And as Steve Ott said at the time, you know, just a couple of boys getting frustrated, and that's all it was. And they moved on from it. But I really think bigger picture what's happened here is Craig Berube, through some accountability and through consistency. And then, of course, look, it is this sport. And through Jordan Binnington coming in and delivering the kind of games he's delivered in net, the team was able to get some confidence because the hard work was paying off. Now when you play with confidence and you show up to the rink with an expectation and a belief and a process, you can become a pretty dangerous team, and that's what the Blues have become.
It's really been quite remarkable to see this thing evolve, and I've talked about this earlier on the show, but I wanted to get your thoughts and help me figure it out. You know, I'm a lineup nerd; doesn't matter what sport it is. And as I look at the lineups and points and who's playing minutes and all those things, and do my little games we nerds do in our heads, you know, between games, I never would have thought, okay, let's put Shen on wing on the top line and that's going to really work. I never even would have occurred to me, what a brilliant move to this point.
Well, what happened there is the bottom line is he was playing on the wing with the Philadelphia Flyers.
Mm-hmm.
He actually played on the wing when Craig Berube was Philadelphia Flyers. The issue was is he came in and he had such great success in chemistry with Jaden Schwartz, had that 77-point season a year ago. For whatever reason, the puck just isn't going in for Jaden Schwartz. That, of course, is stymied Braden Schenn's, you know, totals. And mm-hmm. I think Braden Schenn's play has, for the most part, been pretty good.
Yeah.
So they had to finally make an adjustment, and they put him on the wing. Well, you put him on the wing with basically a guy that I think right now could make a case for a Selke finalist again
mm-hmm.
in the National Hockey League. No doubt another Lady Bing finalist, the way he's played as well. And on top of that, the guy where every time he's touching the puck, something great is happening right now. And so Braden Schenn's the beneficiary of that. And make no mistake about it, another big part of that happens to be the fact that Vladimir Tarasenko is probably putting his best run of the season together right now. So, you know, it was a move that made all the sense in the world just because what they were continuing to do just wasn't working, and it was the one option that they really had. Now, what gave them that option, though, was Tyler Bozak coming back from injury,
mm-hmm.
and that's definitely helped.
And the other thing that'll be interesting to see when Perron's back playing and – you know, fingers crossed that you get as healthy as you've been all season. Do things change again? I don't know why. I'm just fascinated with those lineups. But that's one thing a coach has to do is find the chemistry night to night. It's not like when I was a kid and, you know, a great line stayed together the whole year. That's just not the norm anymore.
No, it really isn't. Actually, you know what, Bob? The way most teams seem to work nowadays is pairs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and although the funny thing is I don't think anybody's naming pairs, right?
So, right.
you really don't see lines the way you used to see them, because even in, like, look at Colorado and look at the start to the season that those guys had. I mean, and that line of McKinnon with Landeskog and Rantanen, you know, and then the first few games where they start to stumble a little bit, you know, Jared Bednar kind of breaks that line up. And mm-hmm. And ironically, they've started to stumble even bigger since then. And I think have only won twice in their last 10 games or three times in their last 10 games. So sometimes I think that's done way too much, to be honest with you. And I think you just leave guys together and let them figure it out.
You mentioned Jaden Schwartz. He's a guy that I think most people going into the season would have made an argument that he's certainly one of the three or four best players on your team offensively, and he's now gone 19 games without a goal. The last time he scored was on December 18th. But the struggle is not necessarily him getting bad shots. He's had 62 shots on goal during that time. He's still making a difference defensively. Do you have any insight on what the breakthrough at some point may be? Because I wonder, when you have a guy who's had similar streaks like this in the past, 2 years ago he had one where he had 21 games or so without having a goal, you wonder how much of that becomes just a game inside your head instead of what's actually should be happening out on the ice.
I think, again, you're overly concerned that he wasn't getting those chances, but he is, and he had another three or four great chances, and it just wasn't going in. Craig Berube's going to look at you, and this is what you got to love about this coach. He goes, he's just going to have to work harder and find a way to get them in. I mean, that's pretty doggone direct, isn't it?
Yep.
But at the same time, you know, you're more worried if you weren't getting those chances. And if you look at the Blues record still with Jaden in the lineup or out, whether he's producing or not, it's pretty doggone strong. He somehow appears to be the engine of this hockey team. And look, I mean, you go 19 games, I'll throw another one. I think we're at 79 periods, 79 sets of 20 minutes of hockey where he has not scored a goal on a goaltender. The one goal he had was an empty netter.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that is just a mind-blowing number for someone with this kind of skill. But the team is finding ways to win. And what's really happened here, and this is not a shocker, I mean, sports really isn't all that hard, guys. Know your role.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and guys now, and I was talking to Steve Ott this morning about it as we were leaving to head up here to Tampa, guys are understanding their role, and they're having success. And because they're having success, they're buying into the role. And all of a sudden, things are starting to click. So the old know your role thing is there. Jaden knows it. He's playing on a line. They're creating chances for it. And look, eventually one's going to go in, and then you just got to hope that when one goes in, all of a sudden the tarp comes off the field and he starts rolling again.
Jordan Bennington continues to impress, and my favorite stat that's come out in the last few days was tweeted out by the Blues. They have held opponents to less than 30 shots on goal in 18 of their last 21 games. Colton Parayko kind of addressed that, said they're playing better as a unit, and Bennington has been in the majority of those starts. How much of that, the defense playing better, is guys feeling comfortable with a guy like Bennington in net? It just looks a little bit different when Jake Allen is in net versus Jordan Bennington.
Well, that's a good question. I think there's a little bit of everything that gets kind of mixed into that. One, Jordan Bennington, although, I mean, there have been some games like that save that he made on Hoffman last night was huge and one of the reasons the Blues won the game. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the reality of it is the Blues really have done a great job of cutting down on chances. They're not giving up 35, 40 shots on goal, and they're not giving up where 20 of them are grade A chances. They're holding teams to 22, 24. You know, they had 11 shots on goal last night in the first period, but then they had 11 shots on goal the rest of the game. And when you do that, you definitely help your goaltender. And then Bennington is making the saves when he needs to make them, and that I think has been the big difference. So I don't know that you could sit there, TJ, and say, well, it's 50% this, it's 60% that, it's 80% this. It really is a combination of both. But what you do tend to see is when the team is playing with confidence and the team has this kind of skill, they're going to find a way to put the puck in the net more times than not. And I think that's why your goals for is about a goal a game more right now with Bennington in net than without him there. And that's also why you see the confidence that this team has in Jake with the way Jake has been playing on the road. That's why those offensive numbers are higher on the road than they have been at home. So it's all tied together, and this is one of those sports where I'm not sure that you could really break it out into percentages.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think there's been a little bit of luck for Jordan Bennington. We've seen some posts. There was one last night that if it hits an inch the other way, that's a tie game with about a minute left. But the one concern I would have with Jordan Bennington at this point, because I think he's played incredibly well. He looks composed. He fronts the puck well. But let me backtrack a little bit. When Jake Allen and Elliot were figuring out what they wanted to do, 2014-ish, I asked David Backus, I said, do you guys feel different with one guy in the net? He said, honestly, they're about the same guy, except when Jake Allen's in the net, he is so much better handling the puck. And I do see that as one big difference here. Jordan Bennington almost gave up a goal last night, mishandling behind the net, and he did that about 3 weeks ago as well. Is that something that you can improve on when you have so many games coming up? We mentioned earlier they have 12 games between now and February 26th. How do you improve on that type of thing while you're playing so much and not practicing?
Well, you go out at morning skates and you go out at practices and you do work on it, and they do. So you got to go back to a few practices ago where Jordan Bennington came out early and was working with David Alexander, and they were actually working specifically on those plays behind the net. David Alexander, the goalie coach, was shooting the puck around the boards. Jordan would come out, stop it, make a quick play, depending on what I think it might have been Steve Ott was out there as well. He would call for, like a defenseman calling for a puck on one side or the other. Jake Allen is by far a better goaltender when it comes to playing the puck, but playing the puck wasn't the issue they were dealing with. It was stopping it in front of the net that became the problem. And so, and that's where it has to focus. But the thing of it is there are guys that come out and play it really well, like a Mike Smith, right? And I actually can't wait when the Blues play Mike Smith when he does it, because almost every single game, the Blues seem to get a turnover and a goal because of it. On the flip side, Jake is extremely good, like Ben Bishop is with playing the puck. And it's very hard for teams to handle that because they become like an extra defenseman back there. I think Jordan Bennington has been smart when he's played it. I don't think he's been over-aggressive. I think there's been a couple of times, and Craig Berube talked to him about it, where he calls it, don't hold the puck back there. Get it back along the wing, where if at least there's going to be a battle, it's a battle along the wing rather than behind your net, which is harder to defend. And they're working on that part of it. And it goes back to the coaching of Craig Berube, guys. They've had to remake the mental aspect of this hockey team. I mean, mentally, they were shot, and there was no confidence. And they've just been working with some parts of the game and then go to the next one when they're set with it and then go to the next one. They haven't just tried to put a whole new house on a weak foundation. They've been rebuilding that foundation so they could build up from there. And things like, the way Jordan Bennington plays the puck, He's gotten better at it, and it's and one way to do that is teach him how to make better decisions, and I think he's been making those better decisions.
Robbie Fabry has not played in three weeks now. He's a guy that has been a healthy scratch seven or eight times in the last 15 games, including four or five in a row here. He had that shoulder injury, but he returned December 28th. Even with David Perron being out right now, he's not getting any look. Do you think this is more just trying to recover from the knee still and maybe the shoulder and all put together, or they just have better options right now and don't have time to be dealing with a guy who's lagging behind?
You know, I think I would have liked to have seen Robbie Fabry go down to San Antonio and play during the bye week, to be honest with you, just because he hadn't played. Now, I know it's a hard thing to ask him to do. It's a hard thing for him to decide to do, you know, at that point in time. But I think that this team has found its roles and it's found some ways to go. And I think they found a bit of a stride here for Mackenzie McEachern with his speed. And so even though, and Craig Berube hasn't been shy. I mean, right now you've had Bortuzzo out of the lineup. That's a healthy scratch because you've got seven healthy D and you've had Fabry out of the lineup. He's a healthy scratch. And I think they're looking for a little more strength from him. And I think they probably, I think they want him to see, get a little bit better physically, just strong out there so he could be more of himself. And then it's just a matter of when he get in there, finding a way to be more impactful. And I mean, it may seem a little fair or unfair, depending on how you look at it, guys. I mean, there's a guy that was basically off for a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to figure it out. And then all of a sudden you're trying to figure it out when a team is struggling in last place, just trying to battle and it's not meeting expectation and everything compounds on you. You know, I think it might have been a different story if he'd been able to get back in there and you had your top players going and things were looking okay. That just hasn't been the case. So everything is kind of compounded to a bit of a rocky season for Robbie Fabry as he tries to get back to regular NHL action.
You mentioned Mackenzie McEachern. I've been seeing graphs, and I know the hockey metrics are, you know, some guys believe in them a little more than others, but the graph that I keep seeing thrown around right now is that when he's out there, he's playing some of the best minutes in the NHL as far as opportunities. And while he's not scoring a lot of points, we saw it again last night. He had an opportunity for a goal. He is routinely in the right place at the right time. And it's interesting contrasting that with a guy like Jordan Kyrou. When they're asked to do the same thing, Kyrou obviously got the guy with the more anticipation and the higher ceiling. But it sure doesn't seem like McEachern's going anywhere anytime soon.
Well, compare those two guys, all right? One guy just kind of knows and is expected to play that fourth-line role. They are not looking for Mackenzie McEachern to be picking up 10, 15, 20 goals, right? They're just not. They're looking for him to play good, smart, forecheck role, set the team up for your next shift, maybe get the puck to the net. If a goal goes in, great. If not, you're forcing an offensive zone faceoff, all right? And use your speed to kind of create some havoc and help make that happen. That's what he's doing. But that's what he did in the minors, too. That's the role that he has played in the last couple of years. That's the role that Mike Yeo said coming out of camp that he envisioned being Mackenzie being very good at. And when he's been in here, he's been very good at it. You look at Jordan Kyrou. Here's a guy that's playing top 6 minutes in the minor leagues. Has played as a top player on his team pretty much every year now. What, for the last 10-plus years? Whether it be juniors or even hockey before that. The reality of it is, though, is then you take that guy and you say, okay, we want you to play in a checking role.
Hmm.
You know?
Yep.
Well,
yeah.
It just doesn't work. And what blows my mind in hockey, and you see this all the time, is they do this to guys.
Yeah, good
they
point.
They call guys up, they play them in a fourth-line role, and they go, well, they got to earn it. Oh, the heck with that. Put him in a role that he could be successful, okay? Because here's the deal. He's not going to find a way to be successful in 8 minutes. I'll tell you who was not successful doing it. Robert Thomas.
Yeah.
You know?
Good point.
Now, I said that, and I'm about to put my foot in the mouth because they got him playing on the fourth line. And Robert Thomas has been pretty good, right? So with Robert Thomas, although it has taken him half a year, and albeit as a 19-year-old to figure this out, right? Okay, but it's taken him half a year to understand how he has to adjust. I've talked to coaches about this from, you know, oh, man, for 25 years now from my time in the minor leagues. They have to learn how to adjust their bodies. They're used to going out there for 18 minutes a game, 19 minutes a game, and now they're playing six, and they're saying, be effective. So you're sitting on the bench more than you ever have in your entire life, and they're telling you to be effective. Man, it's not just about the body. You got to train your mind on how to do it. You talk to guys that play 7, 8 minutes in a game, they're going to tell you, you know, different tricks that they use to just stay awake and to stay in it on the bench.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you're not playing for 10 minutes. So it's a different situation. Now, again, Robert Thomas had a chance to figure it out. But Robert Thomas also knew that at a certain point he wasn't going down to the minor leagues, right?
Sure.
He pretty much knew he wasn't, because they couldn't send him to the minors because of the North American 20-year-old rule for the American Hockey League. But they also knew he wasn't going back to juniors. So he was able to get comfortable and just work on it. If you're Kyrou, if you're one of those other guys, that's not the case. You got to find a way to do it. And Jordan is still young. He's finding a way to do it. Clint Costa, Jeremy Rutherford just wrote. Same exact thing. So, you know, those are the scenarios. Now, last thing on the metrics, and I know that chart you were looking at, TJ, if you look at the way some of the National Hockey League has done some of its metrics, and jeepers, I do not want to get into a Twitter battle with anybody. Okay, leave it alone. All right, just leave it alone and just deal with it with whatever angst you get when somebody decides that they want to use analytics. But some of the analytics would tell you that Dmitri Yashkin was one of the best players on the Blues in some of those areas.
That's right.
And while he was very effective, the problem was he wasn't putting the puck in the net. You know, so it needs to be used, and it needs to be tempered with the role that they're asking that player to play. It doesn't necessarily mean that those analytics mean that this guy should all of a sudden be getting 4 or 5 more minutes a game and quarterbacking your top power play, if that makes any sense.
Just writing on Twitter here, Chris Kerber does not believe in sabermetrics. Here is his handle.
That is not
so there you
what
go.
I said.
that is, I am fully on board.
I'm going to stick Hadley on you.
I guess it brings us to an interesting question then. When you're a team like the Blues, who really doesn't have, they just don't have any points to lose at this point. They use all of their poor play up front, and there's not a huge margin for error as they've been trying to make up points here, and specifically in the next 20 days starting tomorrow, 12 games in 20 days. It's quite a bit. How do you deal with a guy like Kyrou? Is he better off down in the American League as opposed to trying to force him in minimal minutes up here? Because if the minimal minutes, you're probably not going to be playing him 15 minutes if he's not there to earn it. And I don't think he has earned it so far. So is the answer to keep him down low?
It's 100% the answer. In my opinion, they shouldn't have called him up the last time they did. And it was for that reason. He was playing well. He's building confidence. And I can only tell you this from experience, guys. And I spent 2 years in the East Coast Hockey League and then 4 years in the American Hockey League. So 6 years, you know, talking to guys at the minor league level and GMs that would come in and coaches that would come in. And there is a value to somebody gaining the confidence playing down at that level against people more their age, maybe some more youth, where you can make some mistakes and they don't end up in the back of your net. And a coach like Bannister down there can coach you through those. Versus when you make those mistakes up here, the puck is going in the net, and the coach just doesn't have the confidence to play you, so you're sitting on the bench. And so, absolutely, just because a guy's playing well down there doesn't mean that that's necessarily the time to call him up. And that's not just hockey. I believe that in every sport. So, look, this team is playing well right now. They've got the guys to fill the roles. You can let him continue develop and playing 18, 19 minutes a game down there in every top situation, and you are going to be better as an organization for it. I keep letting him down there unless there's a need. Look, if a top six role opens up and you want to bring him up and put him in there, boom, put him in there. But right now, if a top six role opens up, you're sliding Robert Thomas up there, and then you're going to maybe bring up a Sammy Blais or somebody to fill more of that checking role that you're looking for. That, at least to me, is the way I would handle it, because we go back to knowing your role. If you call up Kyrou to play that role that he's not used to, he now has to learn how to play that, and I don't think you have the patience or the time right now or the flexibility, as you mentioned, for him to learn that at this point.
John Hadley just brought in 3 burgers. They are all his, and so we're going to go after this question. Though I do have one more. I was listening to you and Joey Vitale talk last night, and it was right after the second period when you guys were addressing the cross-check with Jay Bomeister, and you were talking about some of the older officials having stepped down. You got younger guys trying to work their way through what ends up being such subjective calls. Hockey, I mean, you could call a cross-check. It's like holding in football. You could call it all the time if you wanted to by the letter of the law, but you let the guys play. How does hockey work through that when there's so many games every night and trying to get new officials here? Some of the young guys trying to pick it up because the officials, something, especially in hockey where you take a guy off the ice, that can single-handedly dictate the outcome of games.
And we have seen that happen. So look, one of the things the NHL has tried to do and is doing is their officials academy. And I don't know if that's exactly what they're calling it, but that's essentially what it is, where they're bringing guys into a combine. They're going through them through the paces, and they're trying to do some basically scouting and then offering guys some contracts saying, okay, we're going to take you from here. You're not going to have to go to the Central Hockey League. You're not going to have to go to juniors. We're going to put you in the American League, and you're going to learn from there. We're going to have you in the NHL. And that's what they have to do. I've had somebody suggest to me, and I don't mind this idea at all. I'd go find some kids about the age of 16, 17, maybe some hockey players, some players that look like they have talent. And I'd offer them a contract. I mean, I'd create some of like the umpire schools that have been so good at bringing kids on that you could sign up and go through when you're 18 years of age. I'd start doing that in hockey. We've got Tim Peel was supposed to retire, I believe, at the end of this year. I don't know if he's going to. I know a lot of people in town know him. There's some other veteran referees that I think were set to retire. In my opinion, I just don't think watching the game, and I know what the league is going to say because they almost have to, I don't think you can let these guys retire. I think there's just way too much inconsistency. The other thing that I think really has to happen in the National Hockey League when it comes to officials, and I, having talked to them, I know exactly why some guys don't want to do it, because some of these guys have a quirky personality and another guy doesn't want to travel with them for a month, right? But the reality of it is I think you've got to go to Cruz. I really do think you do.
Huh.
Because if nothing else, you at least over a period of time will understand how these crews are calling a game, and maybe that helps you out. But when it's two different referees paired up and two different linesmen almost every single game, and I just think you get the constant inconsistency because of it. You know, and okay, maybe Tim doesn't, if you take a veteran guy, for example, right? And you say, we're going to pair you up with this young guy, bring him along. Well, they may not want to because they, but guess what? Here's your job. Do it. And so I think those are things like that. Larry Plow also, and I'll finish that thought with this one. Larry Plow had an interesting thought. And I really wouldn't mind seeing how this would play out. What if at the end of every year you take your five worst referees and you say you're going back to do the lines work? You're coming offside, and those
you guys
kind of
suck. Try this.
Yeah,
and you take,
I like it.
Well, and you take your five best linesmen,
move them up.
They can be a referee.
Yep,
that's not a bad idea.
I wouldn't mind seeing that tried. Larry Plow said that to me years ago. I'm like, the hell could you not get that one tried? That one seems pretty easy, but I wouldn't mind seeing it.
How many officials are there? Do you know?
It's far too inconsistent.
Do you know how many officials are there? How many referees and linesmen?
Not total. Like 100. There's got to be. Combined, maybe 100, 120 of them.
All right. So if you're in the bottom 10% on what you're doing here, it seems like you should lose your job. I think if I'm at the bottom 10%,
maybe.
Well, I don't know. Hadley hasn't fired me.
Just refabricate. Just go back and relearn the skills. And
yeah,
if you're a linesman, if you're a terrible linesman, you can maybe go back to the minors. Although I'm shocked, I tell you, to hear a play-by-play guy criticize officials. I am taken aback.
I know. Well, I have listened to some basketball games to try and learn a better way to do it. But no, but you know what? Like, I mean, baseball. Look at baseball, for example, okay?
Yeah.
Nobody even with the league, in their right mind, could look at any educated person and tell you that Angel Hernandez is a good baseball umpire.
Nobody.
Okay? He's an antagonist, okay? He umps the game as if people have paid their $125 to come see him,
right?
Versus the athletes, and that's the one thing that drives me nuts more than anything, right? But nobody, I don't know that you're going to have a manager in baseball tell you that, right? Or a player tell you that,
right?
But if you talk to umpires, right, they've got it good. Major League Baseball can't fire him.
Yeah.
An umpires union has done such a good job, they can't fire him.
Hmm.
They don't have that option.
It's amazing.
I mean, it's crazy. So I don't know how you fix some of this stuff, but if you're looking at the game right now and you're really taking an objective look at it, not a defensive look, which I understand why leagues do, then you've got to try and keep some of these veteran guys along, and you've got to somehow put them in a situation to help the younger guys, because the one disconnect that I think I see in officiating, and I think I see it a little bit in baseball with as much as I watch, and obviously every day in hockey. I don't watch a lot of the NBA, and I couldn't tell you enough about the college, so that Rammer could. But the one issue that I see that grows more and more is robotic officiating, where you're just calling, you're calling what you're seeing, not with a feel for the game, and you've got to have a feel for the game. But you can justify the cross check that was called on Jay Bouwmeester, okay? And I mean, and it was. So you can justify it. But you're just going with the feel of the game. Is that a call it's need to make? It didn't impact that play. It was one of the. It was a battle play, and I just don't think that feel was there.
Well, you could always go to the replacement referees. That worked well for Seattle back in 2012. I mean, sometimes you score touchdowns you don't deserve. I am with you, Curbs. Thank you. John has not stopped to interrupt us. It's because his mouth is full. He's on his second hamburger, and I know you're not surprised by this, but he went on his rant to start the show. I'm sorry we put you through that.
Good thing he's drinking Diet Pepsi,
though. I'm
saying
that now because he can't jump down my throat again. His mouth is full. And
Listen, when you go on that kind of rant, that's a lot of calories. You got to repack them before you can
good
do
point.
Segment.
Good point.
That is a good point. Hey, Chris Kerber down in Tampa Bay for the game tomorrow. Curbs, thanks so much, man. We'll talk to you again next week.
Okay, guys, have a terrific week and a safe weekend. Talk to you later.
Thanks,
right,
Chris.
You too. Chris Kerber, the voice of your St. Louis Blues. We still have not heard a peep out of John Hadley. Not even noises. Normally we hear
him
chewing, but no, this food is too good. So, hey, we got to go to break. And on that note, we will come back. Missouri did play a basketball game. They played fairly decent.
I thought they played well.
Yeah.
I watched the replay last night.
Yeah. We'll get into that next segment. First, I got to tell you about Mardi Gras. In the classiest gala this side of the Mayor Ball, Mardi Gras presents the inaugural Rock, what's this word?
Bacchanalian.
Bacchanalian Ball on Saturday, February 9th. This year's theme, Time Lab, I don't know what you're saying, Rock, features four time travel theme parties in one as...
Bacchanalian.
His mic's even off, and he, all right. Features four time travel theme parties in one as you roar with Gatsby, go mad for the atomic age, breakdance at Boombox, and see the future at Beyond. Dressed to the nines in your era-specific finest, Rammer. As you enjoy all-inclusive food and drinks inspired by each time period, visit stlmardigras.org now to get your all-inclusive passive to his mind-bending journey through time. We're going to go to break. It's Hard Luck.